Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott, episode 172, recorded September 2nd, 2010. Board up the windows. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Go to Assist Express. If you're in tech support, solve problems fast with a leader in remote support software. Go to Assist Express. For a free 30-day trial, visit gotoassist.com/windows. And by Carbonite. Backing up the files on your PC or Mac is safe and easy with Carbonite.com. For a free trial, plus 2 free months with purchase, go to Carbonite.com, offer code Windows. And by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to publish a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial and 10% off your new account, go to Squarespace.com/Windows. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show that covers the latest news from Microsoft and the Redmond Corridor there in the Pacific Northwest. Here he is, fresh off his visit to Germany to check up on Microsoft Deutschland, Mr. Paul Thurrott, the editor-in-chief of the Supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com, the man in charge of news at Windows IT Pro, and the author of this fine tome, Windows... This is seriously,
why I have not given you a more.
I have seven somewhere. This is Vista, but because I'm still using Vista.
Yeah, but that's even like the first edition of the Vista book.
No, I have this.
It's like four books ago, Leo.
You know, I bought, not only did I buy the hardcover, or not hardcover, but the printed edition, I also bought the Kindle edition of the Windows 7 Secrets book.
Thank you.
And, which does not make as good a doorstop. I tried, and the Kindle is just so light.
It's so small and light, yeah.
It's just, you know. So my recommendation, if you want the doorstop, is to get the full printed edition.
So, you know, the Vista, the second edition of the Vista book was almost 1,000 pages long.
Good
and
Lord.
The Windows 7 book is 1,000 pages long. And one of my goals with the Windows Phone book was for it not to be 1,000 pages long.
How long is
and
it?
So the publishing company wanted it to be 600 pages. And I said, you know what? Even that is too much. We really need to... We need to tone it down. I wanted it to be between 400 and 500 pages. And it's about 450, 460, somewhere
that's,
there.
That's a lot for a book about a phone.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, you know, it's a new platform, so there's a lot to talk about. I mean, everything's new. But I have already gotten an email from someone who said, you know, what is wrong with you? Why is this book so long? You know? I mean, really? In some ways, I kind of crammed to get it done under a shortened schedule. You know, I don't even know what to say anymore. I think it's reasonable, but maybe, I don't know, maybe I'm looking at this the wrong way. What can I do?
I thought those days were over because for a while, when I was, even before, I guess my first book was 2000 or not. No, it was earlier than that, maybe 98.
Yep.
And in that era, thicker was better, right? In fact, I wrote it with Gina Smith, and we wrote, we originally wanted to call it How Do I Get the Dog Hair Out of the Disk Drive, but eventually the publisher, without asking us, unilaterally changed it because they said, well, no one's going to know what that is. So they changed it to 101 Computer Answers You Need to Know, because it was a Q&A format. I thought that was good, but 101 is like, you know, that thick.
Sure.
I have it here somewhere. It's not very, very thick. And then, at the exact same time as that book came out, Kim Komando, who is my arch enemy, my rival.
Yeah, sure.
She does another national. It's her and me doing the national radio shows. She
the
came
original
out
original tech bimbo.
Yeah, well, it was something like I can't remember. Tech diva, I think she called herself. But
that was my phrase for it.
Yeah. Anyway, so we had 101 computer answers. She came out with a book, 1,001 Computer Answers You Need to Know. Same time, and it was this thick. Well, guess which book sold. If you, I know, I'm sorry, you got coffee all over yourself.
If you are telling me that you are implicitly responsible for that woman's career, I can't even tell you how disappointing that is.
The ice cube trays have arrived, by the way.
They're brand new.
They're brand new. Ken went out and bought ice cube trays. Okay, thank you, Ken. You rock.
It's like a contest over there to see who can suck up to you harder. You
Isn't
know?
That bizarre?
Yeah, I don't have this at home.
We were talking, but no, I don't have it any.
I have different degrees of ambivalence here.
You know, you fire a couple employees and all of a sudden the rest of them just really work hard to keep their jobs.
Yes, right. It's a sort of a lockstep thing.
Jen's saying, do you need anything else, sir? We should explain, before the show began, I was price checking on Amazon ice cube makers because I thought it'd be nice to have an iced coffee. It's a very warm day today in Petaluma. And yeah. I'm drinking a hot cup of coffee. I thought this is, I would great if I, but we don't, and I asked John, he said, no, we don't have any ice. Despite the fact that we have not one, not two, but three refrigerators in the kitchen, we have no ice. So I was looking at ice cube makers, $300 ice cube makers. And John says, well, you know, we could put a tray in the freezer. Actually, you said that. How much?
Two for $4.
Yeah, they're super cheap.
He got the good ones.
It's kind of a low-tech, you know, solution to the problem, but...
Ah, but the other ones crush the ice, so there's the difference there. Oh, my goodness, my pedicurist is calling saying, can we move your appointment up, sir?
Unbelievable.
Life at the cottage, it's so difficult sometimes.
I feel sometimes like we live in different worlds.
Well, Dedham.
That explains everything.
All right, let's talk about Windows. I'm so sorry. Did you? I guess we're going to get to the Apple stuff at some point. Oh yeah, I see it here.
Yeah,
but let's because I don't want to scare people off. You know how people are.
There's a lot of Windows stuff here.
Yeah, as soon as we say the word Apple, they go, oh, "I'm not listening to that."
I don't have a lot to say that's positive about Apple today. So
good, that'll make them happy.
That might interest some people.
So Paul will trash Apple.
No. Paul will be fair.
By the way, you were on Home Theater Geeks, and you were great talking about Home Theater PCs. If people haven't seen that, go to twit.tv/HTG for Home Theater Geeks. Paul and Scott Wilkinson talking about Home Theater. That was a good show. Really good show.
Yeah, it was a good time.
Yeah.
Yeah, we talked to him before the show, and I was saying, you know, when I think about home theater stuff, because I went through a several year long phase where I had different PCs, some of them crazy honking HD PCs in my living room, running Media Center and different forms of tuners and so forth, and all the awfulness that was the first few generations of that. And because of some technical reasons, when we came to Fios and HDTV, it wasn't possible to do that anymore. But I've been looking at putting a simplified setup back in the living room, PC-wise. And the thing we ended up talking about a lot, which was sort of what I had arrived at, was that, you know, and we've talked about this a little bit too, the changing face of TV, and that the requirement to actually record shows off of a tuner of any kind is really kind of going away. You know, that this all this IPTV stuff like Netflix and Hulu and all these other services can actually replace much of what's available on, you know, normal traditional TV. And it's an interesting change because you don't, you know, I have a sub, it's probably $99 now, box that can run, you know, Windows 7 and has HDMI out. And it's not an HD PC by any
Less than $99?
Well, it's going to be about $99. I think when I bought it, it was $129.
But it runs Windows 7?
Yeah, what it basically is it's a netbook without a screen, right? It's just a tiny, small form factor.
Interesting.
Netbook, you know, Atom processor, 1 gig of RAM. It's got HDMI out, like I said, and it has a slew of USB ports. And you wouldn't want to run it day to day, but just for watching video, it's fine. In fact, the odd thing about it is it's kind of underpowered, obviously. So when you have video on the machine, it actually doesn't run that great. But for streaming video, actually, that works pretty well. It's kind of a strange thing.
So I guess it doesn't have to render it, so it's just sending data out. So it's fast enough to send the data out.
Right. It has that Ion, video chips that the NVIDIA chips
have. I don't even know if that matters, does it? Because if you're streaming, you're not... Are you watching... Oh, you're watching it on the screen of the computer. You're not streaming it from the computer to the TV.
Right.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, you would use this as the endpoint.
Right. So we'll talk about what Apple did, but I think that's kind of intriguing. And certainly a lot more powerful.
It's where we're going. I mean, and it's funny because we just talked about this. You know, the future of this stuff is streaming, you know.
Right. No storage. But the real point, and I guess I'm going to say the A word, that Jobs said is people don't want the complexity of a computer. The issue with a home theater PC is maybe it's a little more complex than we want.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, for that particular audience, they're very technical people and so forth. But, yeah, you get into that stupid thing where you're hold on, kids, I have to reboot the TV.
Yeah, you really don't. You don't want to blue screen of death during the during.
And by the way, the silliest Windows feature ever, possibly, is built into Media Center, and it has a. I can't think of the name of it. I should just look it up because it has a funny name. But there's a feature they built into Media Center at some point, and it's still available in Windows 7 today. And what it does is literally reboot the computer every night. And it's some kind of a performance slash reliability feature. And the idea is, well, rather than let this thing gunk up over time and have problems, we'll just reboot it every day. So at 3 o'clock in the morning, this thing will just reboot.
If you put steady state on that, you'd really have some.
It just keeps your computer
clean.
Keeps it running.
It's fresh.
That way you don't have that thing I was just describing where it's like, okay, kids, I don't know.
Right.
For whatever reason, it's running slow. Let's just reboot it.
It's like those, we have them in San Francisco, those coin-operated bathrooms that after you're done, the door seals and then hoses the whole thing out.
Absolutely.
It's fresh. So everybody in the chat room says, what is the name of that $99 device?
So yeah. I'm assuming it's $99. It was $129 when I bought it, but it's called an Acer Aspire. And it's the really low-end version.
And its form factor is like netbook laptops?
Let me show it to you, Leo, although it's plugged in.
That would be fun.
Because I've been testing it lately. So
it's called a NetTop. Is that the name of it? Oh, look at that.
Yeah, sure. I don't know if I can.
Look at that. 99 bucks.
I don't know. For some reason, this is hard for me.
And that's pretty cool. Just,
you know, it can.
HDMI?
Yep.
Boy, you put a little more horsepower in that, you play back HD movies, and then you're.
Right. And actually, there are higher-end versions of it. And, of course, Intel has come out with higher-performing Atoms since this time and so forth. I mean, this thing's actually, it might even be a year old or, you know,
yeah,
6
Travis
or 9.
Says it's the Revo 1600, it looks like. And he says they don't make that. They don't sell that anymore. So
okay.
However, you might be able to find one in a Fry's.
Yeah, or somewhere. I'll be selling mine soon, too.
Yeah, or on eBay.
You know, we'll see. I've been testing it. I've been testing it specifically for this purpose because I had it set up here in the office behind me with that machine, but I'm going to be doing something a little more sophisticated here now that I'm back. And
do you think we're getting to the point where right now it's hobbyist because there's, you know, 1,800 different ways to do it and everybody's got a different way and there's a lot
of it isn't. It's hobbyist for people our age, but I think there's a coming generation of people who will never pay for cable TV.
Right.
You know, they're in college now, maybe, or they're young adults that are just finally out in the workforce. And when they look at their fixed budget, you know, getting rid of TV is a no-brainer for them because they're used to watching video on the computer. You know, to them, this is just the way it is. And
right.
to plug an HDMI cable in and blast it out to an HDTV. I mean, an HDTV is a great purchase, but paying every month for cable TV, I think for a lot of people, is not a great purchase. So I just think I think this stuff is all changing.
The chat room mentions the Lenovo Idea Center, which is a little more expensive.
Yeah. Yep.
Same kind of form factor.
Right.
I can't get that camera up here.
I'd be surprised. So you're saying Acer doesn't sell any of these?
Well, maybe they do something similar.
I'd be surprised if they didn't have something.
Yeah. Let's see if I can get this camera up so I can show you. I don't know what's going on. Anyway, let's move on because we want to talk about Windows Phone 7. We've got lots to say. I know you want to give us your take on what Apple announced.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thank you. Kindle 3, did you get one?
I did. I love it.
And all of that. We're going to do all of that in a moment. But first, I want to mention GoToAssist. Do you mind?
I don't mind.
Because this means money in your pocket, Paul Theron.
Oh, please talk.
Paul gets an ever so small portion of all the money we make on his show.
I've been meaning to discuss that with you.
It's smaller all the time. No, actually, your show right now is one of the few shows we do have on the network that's sold out. You're very popular with our advertisers. I'm not surprised. This is a great show. And if you're Citrix, for instance, you know that the people who listen to Windows Weekly are exactly the kind of people you want to talk to about GoToAssist. GoToAssist Express has been updated, improved. It is, you know, using Citrix's very powerful remote access back end for support. So if you're in the support business, if you have software, you're an IT professional, this is a product you've got to know about. It makes it so easy for you to support your clients without a trip across town, even down the hall. You got it on your system. You send them an invitation via email. You can even do it over the phone. You tell them they don't have to have the software installed ahead of time either, by the way. That's really nice. You say, GoToAssist.com. Here's the ticket number. They enter it. 30 seconds later, you're in fixing their computer. GoToAssist was just named the worldwide market leader in remote support by Frost & Sullivan, an industry analyst group that focuses on this sector. Number one remote solution worldwide. Easy to use, very affordable. They even have day passes if you're, you know, just kind of an occasional support guy or gal. It's secure, 128-bit SSL point-to-point. I love this, that not having to install the software is huge, because somebody can call you with a problem. You could say, okay, I can fix it, and not touch their machine. You just tell them, go to assist.com. No cost to them. They install the little stub, and boom, you're in. Now, there's features for you. You can do up to 8 sessions at once. It means you don't have to wait for an install or a scan to complete. You just move on. Makes you very efficient. You can do unattended support. That's nice. You don't have to wait till they show up. It allows you to do an assay of what software is running, including operating system, security software, anything running in the background. So you're kind of not working blind. If you've ever done remote support, you know that's a little, you know, sometimes worrisome. You can do PCs and Macs, by the way, from PCs or Macs. It's completely cross-platform. And you can even drag and drop files from your computer to theirs. So if you've got, you know, a spyware fix, just drag it over and run it, and you're done. Go to Assist. I'll tell you what. Why don't you try it free for 30 days? GoToAssist.com/Windows. G-O-T-O, Assist.com/Windows. 30 days free. Then you decide. I really love it that our advertisers get the idea of try it. We believe in our product enough that we know if you try it for 30 days, you're going to end up being a customer. GoToAssist.com/Windows. We thank them for their support of Windows Weekly. So, you know, you're done with the book, right? The Windows 7...
Yeah, basically. I have some, probably several chapters that I'm reviewing in PDF form, and they've sent me the book cover, and we went back and forth on that. They're actually going to change some of the text on there pretty dramatically. But, yeah, I mean, the writing's done. And one thing I'm not sure if this was ever a factor in the books you've written, but it's certainly been a factor in mine. My own experience is, you know, I got an early word that the RTM, the finalization of Windows Phone 7 was coming. And, of course, I'm kind of holding my breath because I've had a few instances in the past where at the last moment, you know, I've been screwed over by, you know, feature changes.
That's something normal people don't encounter. But, boy, for an author, if they change the look.
And oh, yeah.
I think I remember on Windows 7, didn't you have to redo all the screenshots?
Windows Vista. Yeah, because they changed the icons at the last minute. And it was just, they were great looking, you know, nice. Thanks for keeping that a secret. You knew I was writing a book and, you know, whatever. I realize, you know, the people at Microsoft have bigger concerns than me, but, you know, it was a little hard to take.
Yeah.
But, you know, for Windows Phone, I've been nervous about this because these guys were obviously preoccupied. They're shipping a brand new platform. It's a big deal for them. And I'm not always the first thing on their mind, I'm sure. So I sort of felt like, you know, something's going to happen. Hopefully it won't be too ugly. And actually the way it worked out, I should point out, you know, very early on, I went to friends of mine at Microsoft and also at their PR firm. And I said, look, I want to write this book, but we need to have an understanding. You know, you have to be able to get me a phone. I need to be able to understand what's coming well ahead of time, only for the book. I won't talk about it on the web or whatever. Yeah. You know, everything was going to be great. And one of the things I heard very early on was that their intention all along was to finalize the code in August. So I felt like with the schedule, I would be okay. But of course, the day they announced this was September 1st. So they missed August by a little bit. Not too bad. But yeah, you know, we're finalizing the book. And as this process goes on, I'm relieved, but I'm also nervous because I'm thinking, you know, they're going to screw this up for me. But actually, they did make a few small changes in the RTM version of Windows Phone, but it's nothing dramatic at all. And in fact, I can still add a note about this stuff in the book. It's very simple. It doesn't dramatically change any UIs or anything.
You don't have to reshoot screens. Although that's easier on a phone, I would guess, than it is on a...
Well, it's not so much that. It's just that...
You don't have Raphael to do it for you.
Well, he was useless. No. kidding. I thanked Raphael in the new book because my intention is to work with him again. He wasn't interested.
He's great. He didn't want to do the phone stuff. He's a desktop.
He doesn't feel like he knows enough about phones. Yeah. And I honestly think he would have been great. But, you know, I thanked him because, you know, he would send me these occasional, "You're still alive, right?" you know, kind of messages because I wasn't.
Do you hate me now, Paul?
Well, no, I was literally checking up on me, you know, which was nice. But
do you play Modern Warfare with him?
No, not usually. I mean,
that's how I know you're alive. I see your gamer tag.
Yeah.
I know. Oh, he's alive.
I've been spending the past week proving my son wrong, you know. He was telling, you know, I heard him say to someone, you know, "My dad used to play video games before he got old." And, you know, I took a month off in July so I could write the book. And I'm thinking, you know, really? That happened awfully quickly.
Yeah, well.
I think there's going to be a lot of video gaming this year.
One gets old. Wait till he's a teenager, which is imminent.
Yeah. Yeah, oh yeah.
And you and I'll talk. Because I have one 16-year-old and one 18-year-old.
Yeah. Yeah. He's on the cusp.
Yep. They turn on you.
I know. Like rabid little zombie ducks.
So when do you put it to bed?
Yeah, I would say any day now. I mean, I've got...
Because you need to have it come out with, you want day and date of the book, right? That it comes out the same time. I mean, the phone.
Yeah. So I guess I feel comfortable now saying that, knowing the schedule for the phone as I have all along.
Which you can't reveal, right?
Yeah. I mean, it will be out day and date with the phone.
That's what you want on a book like that, because there will be books day and date. And if you don't,
this might be the only one for the phone. I don't know. You know, I'm curious.
Interesting. You don't think there's anybody else out there?
No, not a general purpose book. I don't think so.
Huh.
And I can't even imagine how they could have done it. I mean, I killed myself to get this thing done. I would be shocked if anyone was able to do anything like this, in that amount of time, you know?
Cool. That'd be nice to own this sucker.
Yeah, I'm not going to retire on this book. I don't know who would buy a book about a phone, but
I think
of it more like this is just part of the deal. Like as the world of computing transitions to these mobile devices, it's important for me to be part of that. And just writing the book was a good opportunity for me to really catch back up with stuff and understand how this thing actually works. And it positions me, I think, technically moving forward, because I intend to write a lot more about the phone and do a lot more in the phone space. So this is a kind of a good way to jumpstart that for me.
You know, it's funny. I for a while got a little bit pigeonholed. This probably started in 2001 era when I started doing Regis and Kelly, and all they ever wanted was gadgets. I never wanted to be the gadget guy. I was interested in computers and computing platforms and not gadgets. I thought gadgets are throwaway items. They're shiny pieces of crap from Taiwan, and I don't want to be the gadget guy. But you get a little bit pigeonholed when you start doing that. And then, in the radio show, and you go and you meet program directors, they're not into computers, but they were all into cell phones. They were all into gadgets. And again, I fought it. It's like, no, I'm a computer guy. I want to talk about Windows and Mac and Linux. And they don't care about that at all.
Right.
They want to talk about gadgets. Well, now, ironically, it's been a good thing that I did at least keep up with phones, because that's where as we've said before, that's where it's all happening now. It's not happening on the desktop. Nothing's happening on the desktop. It's a dead zone.
It is kind of a dead zone. It's interesting.
In a way, I think it's because it's the maturity of the platform. Windows 7 is a really good example. It's basically Vista with some polish. You can't change things too much at this point.
Right. I was just telling someone this. I don't know if it was on that home theater podcast or elsewhere, but I had a meeting recently with someone from Microsoft, and they described Windows 7 in a way that rings true to me, but was not a way that I'd ever heard Windows 7 described before. When you think about things like the Mac OS, one of the things people have always said about that is that, you know, the UI gets out of the way. You know, that's always been like the weird phrase about it. I think that the Mac OS X UI is maybe a little too out of the way or whatever. I mean, but okay, fair enough. That's the way we've described this thing. When you look at something like Windows Phone 7, Microsoft has very explicitly said, you know, the content is what matters. The UI gets out of the way. They've been talking about this ever since they announced it. It's a very big deal with Windows Phone. They don't want the UI to be the thing. You're going to see some more of this with some other Microsoft products coming up. But the person I was talking to described this, described Windows 7 in that way. And I had never really heard them say that. So when you compare Windows Vista to 7, in many ways, what Windows 7 is about is taking away stuff, because Windows Vista was so cluttered and it was so, it was all this stuff, you know, and you can enable stuff, I guess. You could make Windows 7 pretty cluttered if you want, but a lot of, and it's interesting because I really do feel that this rings true. It's very Mac-like in this way. I mean, it's very Mac OS 10-like.
I completely agree. In fact, I said, oh, people who are Mac users will feel much more at home with Windows 7 than they've ever felt with Windows before.
Yeah, and from, you know, it's weird because as a guy with a Windows background, I look at some of the changes in Windows 7, and I'm thinking of the taskbar specifically, where they've kind of, I don't know if bastardized is the right word, but they've really changed the way that programs are launched in a way that I'm a little uncomfortable with still, because that to me has always been the task, the start menu. And if you're going to put it in the taskbar, that's fine, but why do we have a start menu? And why can I also launch things in the start menu? And it's kind of a weird changeover. But if you look at it from sort of a more general perspective, what they're really doing is, look, people want to launch application. They don't use Windows to use Windows. You know, no one, there's nothing on Windows.
That's not the end game. Yeah.
No, Windows is the stuff that's around the stuff that they care about. Right. So for someone who's using a computer, it might be Microsoft Word, it might be a game, it might be Adobe Photoshop or whatever it is. That's what's important to them, and that is the thing that should take center stage. And thus, it does make sense for that thing to be accessible from the one part of the UI that's always visible.
I agree.
You know, and that's really the thinking that went behind that. I just find it odd. I almost want to go back and look, because I feel like I either missed something dramatically there, or I don't think that they ever really described it that way. Or if they did, they didn't push it hard enough, you know. Mm-hmm. But when you look at it that way, it actually does make some sense.
Yeah.
So I guess what I'm trying to say is Windows is very uninteresting.
But that's exactly right. And that's why all the attention is on cell phones now.
By design.
Well, but I don't know by design, but by evolution.
Yeah.
That's what's happened. And well, they're not gadgets. You know.
Right. Well, no, they're computers.
They're computers.
The other thing that plays into that, and this is, again, a theme we've come to again and again, whether you're talking about something like web applications and HTML5 and all the stuff that's going on there on the web, or, you know, mobile devices, there's something interesting that happens when you start over from scratch. And there are a few examples on the PC side that may or may not be relevant to people, like, for example, the Zune software. Mm. The first version of the Zune PC software was just Windows Media Player with a terrible skin on top of it. So for version 2, they wrote it over from scratch, and we're still using that same software. They've been evolving it over time. Mm-hmm. It's amazing how beautiful it was and still is, but it was also missing some stuff. You know, because that's what happens when you start over from scratch. There are missing features, missing things. And Windows Phone 7 will be the same thing. It's going to be beautiful to look at. And then you dig a little deeper and you're like, oh, that's kind of odd. It seems like this obvious feature is missing. You know, Microsoft will plug those gaps over time. You as a Mac guy might appreciate, you know, the first version of Mac OS X when it shipped, beautiful, but it didn't earn DVDs and it couldn't play DVD movies. Or
well,
whatever.
And a more germane example is the iPhone itself didn't have apps.
Right.
It didn't have cut and paste for generations. It didn't have cut and paste. Yeah, it's so obvious now.
Yeah, that's what happens. And I think there's, you know, as a person who's into technology, for me, it's interesting. I like the starting over stuff is very interesting, even though it can be very difficult.
A reset or a reboot. I agree.
I think things need to be rebooted occasionally. Yes. Apple's more aggressive than this than Microsoft is. I don't think we'll ever see a complete reboot on the Windows desktop. But then again, you know, one of the things that they can do to make Windows better, and I think they will be doing moving forward, is using a lot of the virtualization stuff to get rid of the legacy gunk from Windows and be able to ship something that's smaller, lighter, faster, more maintainable, et cetera. But then if you need that backwards compatibility, you can do that through virtualization, which, you know, by its nature is sealed off from the rest of the OS. And it will be a way to move that OS faster forward in a faster way. And that's today's
philosophical wax. He's waxing philosophical. Yeah. Wax on, wax off.
Yes.
And now, Windows 7 Family Pack. Didn't we say that this was coming back before?
I looked it up. We did. First week of July.
You're so smart.
Yeah.
And you were right.
Well, yeah.
So you knew.
I knew they were doing it.
You knew. But now,
they're actually doing
it. Guess. I mean, yeah, so now they've actually announced it. And it's coming October 3 in the United States. It's same thing, $150. You get three licenses for Windows 7 Home Premium upgrade. The big difference between this time and the last time is that it's going to be available in all of the major markets in which Microsoft sells Windows. So I don't remember what the availability was in the first version. But
see,
it was
now I might build a home theater PC because I can get three licenses for so cheap.
Yeah, so if you have a couple of computers at home, at least, mm-hmm. This is a tremendous deal. You know,
$50 per.
Home Premium is the sweet spot. And yeah, $150 for three is pretty fantastic. I'm sure in the Vista timeframe, $150 was one license to Home Premium. You know, roughly speaking.
Right. Yeah, that's about right, huh?
Yeah.
So, I'm just thinking I could build one home theater PC, upgrade a couple of netbooks. Because netbooks, you know, a lot of these netbooks are XP.
Yeah.
I'd love to put 7 on them.
Starter edition or something.
Yeah. Ugh. So this is good. Mm-hmm. All right, I do want to talk a little. I gotta put you on the spot and ask you what you think of the stuff Apple talked about yesterday as we record this.
I want to be, I guess I got to be a little careful about this. I mean, I think.
Well, hold on.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Hold on.
Yeah.
Paul will tell all.
Oh, I'm sorry.
He will reveal what he thinks. But first, somebody reminded me there's no point in teasing. If you're on a podcast, because all it's going to make someone do is fast forward. Please don't fast forward. I want to tell you about Carbonite. Don't fast forward. Look, if you fast forward now, you're going to miss something very, very important. I can feel them pressing the fast forward button.
I got to talk to the Carbonite people.
Why?
I need something that is literally explicitly designed for Windows Home Server.
Oh, like a plugin, yeah. A Carbonite plugin.
Yeah, we're starting to see some stuff from some other companies.
Yeah, that's
but
a good idea.
Carbonite has a, consumer-oriented offering, which I'm sure mm-hmm. is probably what you're talking about. But they have a professional version mm-hmm. as well for businesses. But they need something in the middle.
They need.
I'm willing to pay more than the personal and less than the professional.
Yeah. I think you're right. I think there's something
right
there.
Right in the middle.
There's a sweet spot
yeah.
that needs to be plumbed.
I'm back. I'm literally copying over all of my home server stuff from my old home server mm-hmm. to my new home server, and it's going to take days.
So, the reason Paul wants this, and everybody should really know about Carbonite, is because Carbonite is the best way to do a backup, and it's exactly what you want on a server. Frankly, it's exactly what you want on a laptop or a desktop, anything where you've got valuable assets. And nowadays, boy, everything on our computer is a valuable asset. Our pictures. I had somebody call me the other day saying my phone broke and I have my dog died last week and the only pictures I have of that dog are on that phone. Can you help me? And your heart goes out to people. There's so much, and they're not backing up. Folks, you need a simple solution. You need one that's automatic. You need one that's disaster proof. Because, look, if you're backing up to external hard drive, good. I'm glad. You could say, yes, I do have a backup. But what if something bad happens? There's a fire in the house or somebody steals everything and your backup's gone with your originals. You still don't have a backup. The only real solution is an off-site backup. I think it's good to have both local and off-site. And Carbonite's the way to do it. It's automatic. As soon as you put it on your system, PC or Mac, and every time you're on the internet, it starts backing up. It does not. People say, oh, but it's going to slow my connection down or slow my computer down. No, this stuff is very sophisticated. It really, and there is even a setting that you say, I don't want you, I want you to be really super nice, So once you get the big backup done, you could turn it down and say, look, don't use any bandwidth unless I'm not using it. It's really sophisticated about that. I've never once, and I have tons of machines running Carbonite, never once seen a slowdown. But what happens is it encrypts it, 128-bit SSL, and you can add AES 256 if you want. You could turn that on. So it's really private. Only you have the key. And then it sends it up to the Carbonite servers. Now, here's the cool thing. Yes, you can restore from the Carbonite servers, but I've always said with backup, and one of the reasons I don't like backup software per se is, how do you know you got a backup? All you got is this ball somewhere. Even the Microsoft backup, it makes a big file. Well, they say, oh, you can browse it. It's in there. But I don't have the comfort that I have a backup until I open that backup and see it's there and run it. Right? And it's a pain to have special software. Carbonite
Once you've backed it up, you can go on any machine. You can even use an iPhone or a BlackBerry. You have a free app for that. Go on any machine and actually get the file and see it and download it if you want and run it. Oh, yeah, this document's good. That is fantastic. If you've, you know, if you really have a disaster, you can get back to your data anytime, anywhere. Carbonite. And it's affordable, $55 a year. And this is not tiered. This is all the data on your internal drive. So, you know, it could be gigabytes. Somebody sent me an email saying I have 150 gigabytes. I said, well, you know, the first backup's going to take a while. Remember, it's using your internet connection. But once it's done, then the incremental backups are very quick and pretty much constant. Carbonite.com. I want you to try it free for 15 days. You don't need a credit card or anything. Just go to Carbonite.com, offer code Windows Weekly. If you do decide to buy, and again, try before you buy. 2 free months if you use a coupon code Windows Weekly, so it's even more affordable. Carbonite.com. You got to back it up to get it back, and you got to do it right with Carbonite. Use the offer code Windows Weekly. So we did a special broadcast. Apple kind of threw us a curveball. They they streamed it, which they haven't done since 2000, I think, 5 or 6.
Yeah, that's my first complaint.
What? I'm glad they streamed it.
Oh, I am too. I wish they had streamed it for the whole world to watch, though, because
I know what you're going
to
say.
If you have a personal computer, you can only use it on you could only do it on a Mac.
Only Apple products.
Well, no. Even if you had Safari running on Windows, you couldn't do it.
It had to be. That was stunning.
This is just
a slap in the face.
Extended middle finger to the world. You know.
Now they say it's because they were using this QuickTime technology that isn't available anywhere else.
Yeah, because
is
Apple
didn't
make it available on Windows. Oh, yeah,
okay.
Right. Apple has never updated QuickTime past what version, whatever they were on before, 7 or whatever. Right. So they've released, you know, QuickTime 10 as part of Snow Leopard.
Right.
They've never updated QuickTime like that. It's complete.
You had to, well, and by the way, they left a lot of Apple users out because you had to have Snow Leopard.
Yeah.
It's fine on your iPhone. And that just shows you. I mean, they don't care about the computers
anymore.
Screw
you, Apple. I have a Mac, so I watched it.
And are you disappointed?
I hate breaking it out, but I'm sorry.
I love it. It wasn't fun. It wasn't easy, but I did.
But yeah, after I downloaded my 1.3 gigabytes of Snow Leopard updates, you know,
I haven't opened the thing in three weeks.
And
we didn't put Snow Leopard on most of our machines because at the time I didn't think it was a very compelling upgrade, and it did break some things. Yeah. The Mac Mini that we started putting it on yesterday so I could at least watch the thing is still installing.
Yep. No, this is one of those things, you know, people don't talk about on the Mac. You know, everyone just silently accepts it. It always has astonished me how many updates these guys put out and how big they are, you know. And I think it has something to do with the way the
nobody cares about that anymore.
Packages are built on. So I don't know. I just think it's weird.
You don't care if it's really 273 megabytes. I mean, I guess you will in the days when we start having bandwidth caps. But come on, everybody's got broadband now, right?
No, it just takes a long time. And you know, on the Windows side, look, very open about complaining about the, you know, there's a weird thing on Windows where you run some series of updates, you reboot the computer,
right?
Then you have more Windows updates, you run those, you reboot the computer, and then you come back and it has updates. To the updates you just installed, like you have to install those, and like, but you know, it's really the same on the Mac. And but what's alarming about this is I actually was keeping this thing up to date, and I think the last time I updated it was sometime in July. But then I come back, you know, I literally cracked the thing open after taking it out of the closet, and I literally had to reboot it 3 times just to.
Well, that's like Windows too. They've had a lot of updates in the last month and a half.
Yeah, they sure have.
Yeah. And, you know, the funny thing, the stream worked pretty well. Apple has not, to my knowledge, released numbers yet. So, and I imagine quite a few people were watching. It did start to stutter towards the end a little bit, though.
Yeah, I got some stuttering.
It's supposed to be this new HTTP streaming that is auto-sensing.
It was fine. It's better watching it than not watching it, you know, so it was okay.
So let's go through the items. What do you think about Ping?
I don't think anything of Ping. In fact, aside from the fact that it is a... You know, Zoom Social ripoff, right?
I did say that in our coverage. I said, welcome to the social.
Yeah, welcome to the social 3 years later, you know. Okay, fine. But look, I need to review it. I need to look at it. So whatever. So I put this complete piece of garbage on my computer. I hate iTunes. And none of the artists I care about are in this thing.
I know. So, I've been trying to follow bands, and I can't find any I want.
Literally, the bands that I do care about are not in there.
Well, that's presumably they're going to. I mean, Doesn't the label have to do that?
I don't know. Do you think they might have had this ready to go? I mean, I don't understand. Who were the seven artists that they... Johnson and the
yeah,
Loser.
I've got Dave Matthews, U2, yeah, Chris Martin, and Yo-Yo Ma are the three I follow. And I try to put in Cake. I love Cake. In fact, they do the iPod ad. And they're not in there.
Let me tell you the worst thing about this event was actually Chris Martin.
Yeah, I didn't watch that part.
Did you notice that he couldn't sing?
Really?
It was terrible.
Oh, they turned off the auto-tune.
Oh, it was terrible. I have never witnessed that.
Really? He couldn't sing? That's kind of sad.
Live music is almost always excellent, you know? And it, whether or not I care about the artists they have at the end of these Apple events, they're usually decent. You know, they can perform. It's that person with a piano or that person with a guitar. That's pretty much what it's always been, you know? And this guy launched into that famous Coldplay song, you know, the big single that was also part of their iTunes ad at the time. Right, and it was awful. It was just awful.
Oh, that's depressing. I didn't, I tuned out by then. I was moving on.
Sure.
So I have installed Ping. A couple of things to notice. No connection to any other social network. So it's a walled garden, which means that if the only people who are going to use this, 160 million people use iTunes, but the only people who are going to use this are people who are living in iTunes, right? Because otherwise, I'm not going to pump a lot of data in here. I keep trying to update my picture and... It never lets me update.
I was able to update my picture.
I picked genres, classical, singer, songwriter, spoken word. Let me just show you the music I like.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Ludacris, Jay-Z, yep. Black Eyed Peas.
All right, so these are the artists I would have imagined for you.
No, you know what it is? It's because my son also buys music on my iTunes account, so it's all my son's music. Oh, so there's a problem right there.
All right, so I'm going to follow. I will follow you.
Follow me. Follow me. And there's the artists there that they recommend for me, none of whom I have any interest in. Lady Gaga, Linkin Park, Jack Johnson, Katy Perry, Taylor Swift, Diddy.
Katy Perry is everything that's wrong with music.
Exactly.
So it's terrible. My problem with iTunes, though, is... This application is so desperately in need of a complete redo.
You got to wonder, because I have to say the UI on this is not
impressive. And you would think like version 10 would be the one, right? They're going to go to 10.0. This has got to be it. But God, it's the same creaky, it's just, why can't they just fix it? I mean, it's got a new icon, nice.
Hey, I could follow the Beatles.
Oh, okay.
You can't buy the Beatles, but you can follow the Beatles.
Can't do that. The other thing, so iTunes previously had a way... to get alerts about bands that you cared about.
Right.
So if they released a new album or whatever, you would get that information. I assume that this is essentially built on that, that in addition to that type of information, you would also get updates when, they were in concert or, whatever it might be. I assume it's something like that.
I don't know. I mean, wasn't that a plugin called Like?
Yeah.
I don't know what happened to that. I think they bought it or somebody bought it. Anyway, I think this is interesting. It's a strange thing for Apple to
it's
put
so
in
weird.
There.
I mean, it's just off to the side. It's its own little thing. I don't know. I just don't get it.
How about the, you must like the new iPods, the new Touch, the Nano. I bought a Nano right away.
Yeah,
I thought the Nano looked pretty cool.
Right. The iPod Touch is awesome. It was awesome. They've added all those features from the iPhone 4 that you want.
Right.
The camera's not quite as good as the iPhone 4, I guess, but whatever. I mean,
that's a big problem, by the way.
Except that it's not.
It could have been a great camera.
But people will always have their phone with them. That's the point of having an awesome camera in the phone.
Right.
I guess you're in the world. It's everything for you, right? I mean, for me, the media player, the iPod is obviously a jack of all trades kind of device, but it's not going to do. It's not connected when you're out in the world, So they have to have some differentiation. I mean, to me, that's okay. I get it. It does do the HD video recording, which is fine. We'll see what that looks like. It's got the screen, which I think is the biggest deal. For those high resolution games, especially. Yeah. I think that Apple made a great point about the iPod Touch that it is the gaming. Portable gaming platform. It outsells, the PSP and the Nintendo DS platforms combined. Obviously, the game market on the iPhone/iPod Touch is phenomenal. I mean, there's not much to say that you can complain about with the iPod Touch. To me, that looks great. The other stuff, you get off into some weird territory. I mean, the iPod Shuffle is the one they had 3 years ago. You know, they brought it
back. Went totally backwards, yeah.
I mean, that's just so weird.
Well, although it's an acknowledgement. I think it's an acknowledgement that the Shuffle, the Wrigley, the Dentine Shuffle was a flop. Nobody wanted it. You want buttons.
That thing came out. It was like an, it was that SNL joke brought to life.
It was.
It's like, look, now it has no buttons. And it's like, no, seriously, it has no buttons. I mean, it was just bizarre that they did that. So that Shuffle design that they had before was the right one. They brought it back. Good for them. By the way, they've done this before. You know, when they did that, I don't know, but the Fat Boy, you know, Mac or iPod Nano a few years back, they went back to that skinny stick design. I mean, it was kind of, you know, Apple has done this before, so there's some precedent for it. You know, the Nano is a little odd because it's neat that it has multi-touch, but it's not compatible with any of the iOS applications. So the big advantage of that is lost. The form factor is neat. I mean, it's a nice, I think, you know, the it's the right size and shape and all that stuff. But it's lost some features, which is a little weird. You know, it doesn't have the camera anymore. So now it's not like the flip camera replacement that it used to be. That's interesting. They made it more like a pure media device, I think. So I think some people, that you know, that'll be okay. But obviously the iPod Touch is the mainstream iPod. It's the one that sells. And I don't know that this got any press, by the way, but one of the big changes, maybe the biggest change, is that with the iPod Touch, the low-end version is not last year's model like it was last time. It's now, it's all based on the A4. So right. You don't lose anything but storage by going to the low-end one, which was not the case before. People who got the low-end one before really got screwed.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Huh. I like the Nano is kind of intriguing. I bought it just because I want to see, you know, to review the screen. Yeah. The idea is that screen as small as it is, postage stamp size? Is that usable?
Yeah, it's so cute. You know, we'll see. I'm going to review all of these. I mean, like I said, the iPod Touch is not, you know, there's not much you can say about it. It's just, it is what it is. It's great. And, you know, whatever. It's, you know, what are you going to complain about?
I was disappointed with the Apple TV. I thought, boy, Apple had a chance to really take world by storm with this thing.
So, obviously, the crazy rumor stuff about the Apple TV was not borne out. There was no App Store thing. There was no, remote control that had touch gestures on and stuff like that. That none of that happened.
Right.
What they did was they turned Apple TV into sort of a Roku box.
It's Roku.
Yeah.
So, Roku with fewer features.
No, not necessarily, because you know the Apple TV is also attached to the Apple ecosystem, right? I mean, I think the big strength of these products is the market that's on the back end of it. There's always been a weird kind of difference between the support on the Apple TV and what was available on a Mac or a PC or an iPod or whatever. In that, you know, I don't know how this will be on the new version, if it will be different at all, but you know, there was no, I could be wrong about this, but I don't think there was a way to access like iTunes U content from an Apple TV, I think. Only some of, or most of the stuff, but not all, was available remotely. I will say in my own experience, I've always actually been a big fan of the Apple TV. We use it. We pretty much use it to stream. So, you know, being able to download to the device wasn't really that big of a deal. The big problem with the Apple TV streaming stuff, when you talk about streaming from a PC, that I don't believe, I'm interested to see, but I don't think they've fixed, is for you to interact with the Apple TV from a PC or a Mac, literally the computer has to be on, obviously, logged in, and iTunes needs to be running. It's a real kind of hokey and old-fashioned way of doing things. You know, sharing on the PC side and from Windows Media Player or from Zune, does not require an application to be running because these things are implemented as services. Hmm. And we know Apple gets services. I mean, they are daemons or whatever.
Well, there are plenty of people who make iTunes streaming servers.
Absolutely. Now, why they don't do that, you know, I don't know.
It's a good point. I didn't even think of that.
I wish they would, because it makes it really, like low tech, you know.
Does Windows Home Server has a streaming, iTunes streaming on it, doesn't it?
No, not built in, but the HP server does include an iTunes server.
So you could use that, right?
Yeah, if you had one. I mean, yeah.
It's almost better than buying a Mac.
It is absolutely better than buying a Mac.
Funny.
Well, I wish that there was an iTunes server such as it was, which is really just an iTunes service.
Right.
That you could run on a Mac or PC. It shouldn't matter what the computer is. I mean, you shouldn't have to go to that computer, log on, and run iTunes.
Right.
I mean, it's so dumb. You know, you sit down in front of your HDTV out in the living room, you put on the remote, and it's like, can't connect to library. And then you got to run in here and run stuff. It's just, it's so unnecessary. And I, who knows? Maybe they are fixing this. I don't know. But I think they did the right thing on the, you know, the pricing on the TV shows and the ability to, you know, they call it renting, but it's really just like a watch once kind of thing, which is pretty much what TV shows are. I don't know. You know, when you look at some of the low-level issues with the Apple stuff, aside from the thing that I just mentioned, the other thing that Apple doesn't have, well, there are a couple of other things. They don't have a subscription service of any kind, which I think is a big problem. And they don't have this thing that they that we do have on the Zune side, which is this persistence of content type of thing. And the notion on the Zune side is that when you buy something, if you buy a movie or TV show, for example, it's always attached to your account. You can access it at any time you want. I think we talked about this. You know, I could buy, and I have bought, an HD movie on my computer. I don't download it. I just buy it. But then I can walk out to my Xbox 360, and it's attached to my account. So it shows up in the list under the Zune interface. And I can just, I can literally and have literally streamed 1080p video of a movie that I purchased but never physically downloaded to any of my machines. But it's always attached to my account. I own it.
Yeah, I like that better.
I don't have to keep track of a file.
This whole rental thing is also dumb. I'd much rather own it.
Well, I think you need to support rental. I mean, it's okay.
Okay.
But, you know, and Apple has had some advantages on the rental side that, for example, compared to Zune. So when you rent something, if you rent a movie historically on iTunes, you can copy it to a device. You can carry the thing around with you. And you do have to still maintain the file. You have to keep track of it. But if you don't watch it on that device, or maybe you only watch part of it and the rental period hasn't expired, you can still copy it back to the PC, copy it to another device, stream it out to your Apple TV. You can still watch it. You know, on the Zune side, this is something Microsoft needs to fix. You decide at the time of rental where you're going to watch it, and you can never change it again. So if you download it to your device, it's stuck there. If you don't watch it, too bad. You can't watch it on the TV. You can't watch it on the Xbox. And, you know, it's not like everything Microsoft does is better, but there are some interesting issues, I think, on both sides of the fence. Yeah.
You know that you do know that Amazon responded to this by cutting the cost of buying a show to 99 cents.
No, I'm getting a... Do you hear that sound?
No, you're getting a little funny sound. Let me hang up on you. That's a little Skype thing. I'll be right back. It's a little tap, 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 tap. It's probably because I bought fairy trees in my We Rule and the fairies are...
Oh, still there.
Still there.
Yeah.
Wonder if it's coming from me. I don't hear it here.
It is. It's gone.
It's gone?
Yep.
Oh, that's interesting.
Weird.
Weird.
Anywho, no, I didn't hear that about Amazon.
Hold on a second. Let me put a little edit mark in there, and I'll ask you that question again. Did you hear that Amazon is now responded by slashing the cost of buying shows to 99 cents? So you rent from Apple or you buy from Amazon. By the way, Amazon's on the Roku, but not on the Apple.
Yeah, and so here's one thing about Amazon. I mentioned that on the Zune platform, there's this persistence notion, you know, that when you own something, you own it. You can always get it. Amazon also does that. Now, it's a little harder on Amazon because there are these DRM type issues. So you can download an Amazon movie or TV show that you've purchased to a certain number of devices, probably three. And once you've exceeded that, you can no longer download that item anymore. But you can stream it forever. As long as you purchased it, it will always be there for streaming purposes. So on that Roku device, for example, obviously you can't download to the Roku, but you can stream to it. If you are on a Media Center PC and through Media Player, perhaps, or you know, through Amazon's own software player, you can stream anything you've purchased at any time. So that's, you know, that's not bad. I mean, the problem for Amazon is they don't have that infrastructure. You know, the nice thing about the Zune or iTunes is that it's a hub for all of this content. You know, Amazon has the back end service, but they don't really have that application that everyone's going to have on their PC. So it's not as pervasive. And hopefully Amazon will get into, you know, say on the Xbox 360 and onto more devices and all that, because it's a good way to do it. And I think the right way to do it. And hopefully in the future, you know, Apple might do that as well.
Moving along, that's enough. You can now tune back in if you were tuning out. We're done.
You can't ignore it. I mean,
no, it's the news, and it's a competitor.
And it's not just a competitor; it's what everyone uses. You know, right. I mean, I would love to not have to use iTunes. You know,
right?
I look forward to that future.
iTunes on Windows, from the calls that I get on the radio show, really crappy. Is it my sense is it's QuickTime, not so much iTunes, but the required QuickTime component.
Yeah, I'm not sure. You know, there are a couple of things. iTunes that I actually kind of like, and the QuickTime platform, you know, they do the soft captioning stuff, which is huge for me,
right?
Personally, and for a lot of other people, and good for them for doing that. The performance is tough. It's always been a pig of an application, and I really hope for 10 that they were going to rewrite the thing from scratch.
No,
this is the same thing. It's just
hanging features on a pig.
They changed the icons. You know, yeah, they've literally put lipstick on the pig. So. Yeah. Maybe next time.
Moving along to Xbox 360, a little bit of a price hike on that. Wait a minute. What? There's more?
Kindle. I forgot about the Kindle.
Kindle 3. So
I'm sorry. You know, now that I'm looking at it, you were right, because actually Xbox is before.
I'm just following your outline, dude. I'm not making this stuff up.
Sorry.
It's okay. Xbox 360, a new controller and an Xbox price hike, live price hike. That wouldn't be good.
Yeah, Xbox Live is interesting because it's obviously been very successful. It's arguably the most successful online service for a video game console. Approximately 50% of the people, or about 12.5 million people on there, are paying for it at about $50 a year. And they've never raised the price, but then they've never really added anything of huge value to the service over what they've already offered, you know. And, if you're familiar with multiplayer gaming on the PC... You know that, you know, you typically don't pay for that feature, you know, multiplayer gaming. I mean, unless you're talking about one of those.
Blizzard makes you pay for it.
Yeah, like World of Warcraft, right. You know, a pervasive world of some kind, you know. But whatever, you know, Microsoft's one stab at having an Apple-like audience is the Xbox 360. We pay for it and we love to get online and, you know, shoot each other up in Call of Duty or whatever. So they're raising the price of this thing to... $60 a year. Let me see if I got that right. Yeah, $60 a year, starting in November. But now they're having a sale, so if you upgrade now, it's $40. You know, for this next year. I don't know. You know, I don't really understand it. Because it's amazing to me that they've gotten away with charging for this thing. And I think it's interesting to note, by the way, if you were to buy a Windows phone and wanted to play games with people online on that phone, you don't have to pay for it. You know, Xbox Live is actually free on the phone. And, you know, so clearly when they have this established platform, they feel like they're free to charge because, you know, who's going to complain? We're going to pay whatever we have to pay. You know, we've bought multiple consoles. We buy the same game every year when it comes out in the upteenth sequel. That's what we do. So I guess we're just going to take it. You know, it's just the way it is.
Well, yeah, you don't have a choice. It's not like you can use the competitive
server. I'm going to use that. I'll use that other service.
Windows. Dead.
Play a game. Yeah.
Now they got you. They got you a barrel.
Yeah, and the other thing they did, I found this to be so bizarre. They've released, they are releasing a new version of their controller. And the thing that's interesting about that is the Xbox 360 controller has always been widely regarded, and by myself as well, as just being excellent overall. But there is one weird problem with it, and that's this directional pad, the D-pad. And oddly enough, I noticed this on the new Xbox because I use the controller as a remote control to control Netflix. And on the Xbox 360, the way that your Netflix queue or any of those libraries that they show you, you know, critically acclaimed movies or dramas or foreign dramas or whatever.
Right.
It's this huge list of movies that kind of visually appear to go off into the distance. So you have to scroll left to right and you do it with this directional pad. And it is very, very easy by mistake to just click a little up or a little down. And maybe you're 120 movies into the list and then you go down. So you go to the next list by mistake and you're like, oh, shoot. And then you go back up, but then you start at the beginning of the list. And you have to go all the way through it again to get back to where you were. And it is actually really aggravating. And if I understand what they've done with the new controller is they're replacing this D-pad with a different design where there's actually like a kind of a check or a plus sign in the middle of it. And you can press and hold and it pops out so that it becomes a four-way thing that you couldn't by mistake you know, press at, say, a 45-degree angle or whatever. So it's a what they call a transforming D-pad. But the weird thing about it is, you know, the new Xbox 360 is black. And when they came out with this new model, they came out with all new black, you know, jet black accessories to match. The old Xbox, of course, is white, like an Apple product. So they come up with this new controller. You think they must, obviously, they'll have a white version of the controller. They'll have a black version of the controller. But they aren't. They're having one version of the controller, and it's gray. it's like, guys,
well,
seriously.
It's merged. I mean, you know, white and black.
Yeah. It's just so bad. And, you know, the controllers generally are $40 each, and they're only going to sell it as part of a $60 pack that includes a charge and play kit, which is a way to charge the controller through the USB port on the console.
Right.
It's just so shabby. You know, it's just too bad that they had to do it that way. But, you know, I'll buy one like a jerk because, as I think I've demonstrated before, Xbox 360 fans tend to open their wallets whenever they have to.
There's always third. I mean, unlike Xbox Live, at least there's third-party controllers you can use, right?
That's true. Although, in my own experience, I actually really do prefer the Microsoft controllers for whatever reason. I think they've done a nice job.
I bought a bunch of other. You're right. You know what? I bought a bunch of other controllers, and I end up using the Microsoft one. It just feels nice in the hand. So the shape is the same. It's just gray. Yep. And a new D-pad.
Well, the other thing they've done, I have a controller here because I'm, of course, just dying for this podcast to end so I can play video games. But there's a, you know, you've got these colored buttons over here.
Yeah.
The colored buttons are matched to on-screen versions of these buttons. When you have to do something to get something done in a game, they'll show you a blue X or a yellow Y or whatever. Or yellow Y or whatever. The buttons on this new controller are not colored. They're all a dark gray color.
Oh. So
the same dark gray color.
Oh.
So, you know, It's
that's so, not good.
It's so shabby, you know. So you'll have to look at it and say, okay, wait, that's a the color doesn't matter anymore. I can't make that association. Let me pay attention to what the letter is, and then you look down at the controller and be like, okay, you know,
that's not just, how could they do that?
Because they just don't pay attention. You know,
that is really that's not good.
Yeah. No, the whole there's a whole weird vibe to the Xbox guys, and this is an example of this. You know, it's just there's something disconnected about these people. Yeah. You know, like they don't, I don't know.
What's wrong with you guys? What's wrong?
They don't make mistakes, you know, then and they don't really have to worry about, you know, anything, apparently. So that's what they do. I don't know. Very strange.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, I still have yet to buy the new Xbox. I'm still waiting to make sure it doesn't red ring.
It's been great so far. And we, you know, it's been a hot summer. We run that thing in this little closet, and
I think it's going to be okay. I think it's going to be okay.
It's been very reliable.
So the Kindle you got last week, we saw it. Kevin Rose got one. Steve Gibson got one. Everybody seems to like this new. Did you get the gray or the beige model?
I went gray.
Yeah, I like the gray. Now, there's an example of gray looking good.
Right, because it's, I think, more soothing, you know, for the eyes.
Yeah, because it goes in more into the background so you can focus on the screen.
Yeah, which is what you're looking for.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this thing's awesome, and you know, I've got some emails from people who are like, you know, how come you didn't compare it to the Nook or whatever? You know, I've looked at the other, mostly the Nook, I mean, but some of the other competing ebook readers, and I really just, there's no comparison. I mean, the quality of the screen and the performance of the page turning compared to other e-ink readers, you know, the battery life, the library that Amazon has, it's just awesome. I love this thing. And it just keeps getting better. You know, it's really, really nice.
Yeah. So that's where you primarily read these days?
Yeah, this is always my first option.
Yeah.
Always on the Kindle, yeah.
So I saw a news story. I thought you'd probably cover this, the new name for Windows Live Sync. And maybe finally we've got a use for Mesh is Windows Live Mesh.
This is so weird because Microsoft previously had these two sync technologies. They had Windows Live Sync and they had Live Mesh, which was never called Windows Live Mesh. It was Live Mesh. Live Mesh was in a perpetual preview. They didn't call it a beta, but it was like a platform preview or whatever the name was. Live Sync, Windows Live Sync, started as Folder Share, and then it became part of Windows Live Essentials. And then for the new version of Windows Live Essentials, which hasn't shipped in final form yet, it's available in a beta right now, they were going to take an updated version of the Live Mesh technologies, include that instead in Windows Live Essentials because it was the superior product, and then rename it to Windows Live Sync just to keep everyone on their toes. And what they're doing now is they're going to rename it again to Windows Live Mesh, because there are other products with the Sync name in Microsoft, and they don't want to confuse people about what really is going on there. And they're also addressing some of the complaints, because one of the things that happened when they moved from Live Mesh to Windows Live Sync is they lost the web desktop, which was a feature I never really used in Live Mesh anyway. The storage allotment went down from 5 gigs to 2 gigs in the cloud, which was kind of weird because it's attached to SkyDrive, which, of course, is 25 gigabytes. So if anything, you'd think it would have gone up. And then they had taken away some other features around things like the ability to sync hidden files and so forth. So with this change, in the final version of Windows Live Essentials, you'll be getting something called Windows Live Mesh, which is, again, you know, the next version of Live Mesh. It's still not going to have that web desktop. It's still not going to have the, you know, the folder ornamentation, as I call it. You know, you could tell that folders in Windows that were synced were different because they were blue, not yellow, that kind of thing. That's all going away. But they are putting the storage allotment in the cloud back up to 5 gigs. They are syncing hidden files now. The performance is going to go up dramatically. Supposedly, we'll see on that one. But it's just, you know, it's funny because when I originally complained about the changes they made in what was going to then be called Windows Live Sync, I talked to some people at Microsoft, and I don't want to say they were belligerent about it, but, you know, they insisted that nobody used this online storage aspect of it anyway. And plus, they had zero interest in getting into the free online storage market.
Right. Paid, yeah, I don't blame for that. Yeah.
Zero interest. But I said, you know, it just seemed to me like, of course they don't use it. You're giving them 2 gigs of space. I mean, 2 gigs is useless. I can buy a...
Well, and plus there's SkyDrive. So,
right. I mean, but they have SkyDrive, but they have done everything they can to make it impossible to use.
Right.
They do nothing to offer any form of drag and drop file copy or, you know, it's terrible. You know, it's designed to be terrible. They don't want you to use it. And, you know, again, I appreciate that I appreciate what they're trying to do, I guess. And I understand that they don't want to get in the storage market. But if you don't want to get in the storage market, don't have a storage product, you know, and don't call it SkyDrive and don't say it's got 25 gigs of storage. I mean, you either have it or you don't. You know, it's to me, this half step stuff is kind of dumb. So, you know, even in the announcement, they carted out this data, which they had told me about months and months ago, where, you know, we can prove that no one is using the storage anyway, but because you complain, we're going to give it to you. And it's like, thanks. You know, I mean, it's just. So okay, curious. You know, whatever. You know, it's just the way they are. So. Anyway, it's changed
style.
Yeah.
So we're going to do our Windows 7 feature of the week and our Windows 7 tip of the week. We do not have Audible on the show today. I should have warned you. So you can save your Audible recommendation if you'd like, or you can still do it. Okay. I think it's become a regular thing. We want to know what Paul's listening to. Our software pick of the week.
Save it.
Before we get to the good stuff, because this was all just prelude to the good stuff. Let's talk about
the Call of Duty. You mean?
No. Yeah. Well, that's the good stuff, but that's after the show's over. I meant your feature, your tip, your software. Yeah, yeah. Before we get to Paul's picks, let's mention Squarespace.com. If you go to Squarespace.com/Windows, you're going to see the incredible site, the place where. They call it Exceptional Websites Begin. The secret, in fact, behind exceptional websites, squarespace.com/windows. Squarespace is both hosting and software that's going to give you an incredible look that's easy to design, easy to support with content, and very affordable. This is hosting plus the software. So you set it up. Starting with their great templates, you can completely customize, drag and drop, click. If you don't have to know any CSS, any design stuff. Now, if you do, it completely supports that too. So, but even somebody who's not a designer can get a great looking site that looks unique to you. And of course, and I think this is really important because there are technologies that will get you just so far. And if you want to go to the next stage, you can't. This will grow with you as much as you want. It has complete social support for all of, you know, Facebook and Twitter and all of that stuff, all the like buttons, Flickr, Quick, Pandora. I mean, go on and on. Incredible stats, so you know exactly what's happening, who's visiting your site, how long they're staying, where they're coming from. If you're a photographer, a lot of photographers use Squarespace because the photo galleries are stunning. They've got form building and data collection, makes it easy for you to get feedback. Of course, great commenting. Also, the ability to use the other commenting systems. I use a third-party system called Echo, which I love, and it works just great with Squarespace. Some of the best sites in the world use Squarespace. I think you might like it. That's why we've set up a two-week free trial. Just go to squarespace.com/windows. You don't even need a credit card. If you use word windows, they're going to say, it's Leo and his friends. Come on in. Try it out, please. And then if you decide to buy, and it starts at $8 a month, it's very affordable. I mean, that's for a great site. All hosting, all it costs, everything you need. If you decide to buy, if you use the word windows in your coupon code, you'll save 10% for the life of your site every month. So that can really add up. Squarespace.com, the secret behind exceptional websites. Give it a try. All right, Paul, your Windows, you're still doing it. The Windows 7 feature of the week. What is the feature this week?
It's Windows Explorer, the Windows shell. I was just thinking about this. People who have been around for a long time and have been using Windows for a long time may appreciate, and maybe I'm bringing up back a horrible, horrible memory, but in the pre-Windows 95 days, you may remember that there were all these managers, right, in Windows. There was a file manager, mm-hmm. which some people still insist is somehow better than Windows Explorer. There was a program manager for launching applications. There was a printer manager, you know. And one of the changes they made when we went to Windows 95, we're still using the same type of shell today, is that these things were all replaced, and they were replaced by some language we don't really use that much anymore, but they were in Windows now are things that are explorers. You know, there's Windows Explorer, but there are all these experiences in Windows that are supposed to be explorers, you know, like the control panel or network explorer or whatever, you know, and the names have all changed over time, but these things are considered explorers, like Internet Explorer, you know, it's an explorer. And there were some UI conventions that were carried between the shell and IE for that very reason, that, you know, IE was supposed to be one of these explorers. It was supposed to be, you know, sort of the same thing, but instead of browsing the file system, you would browse the web, you know, in Internet Explorer. In Windows 7, I mean, what we get obviously is the very latest evolution of this thing. And again, I've been doing this for a long time, so I think cursory overview here on the podcast, but I'll be writing an article that will be up on the website by the weekend where I'll describe all of the changes that have occurred in Windows Explorer between, you know, Windows XP especially, but also Vista and then going forward into 7. And some of the highlights are, you know, the removal of the menu bar, which was always a big deal in previous versions of Windows, a much smarter address bar, you know, the integration of Windows Search and so forth, simplified navigation, the new toolbar and all that stuff. So I'll go through all the different gunk that's in the Windows that you see, but suffice to say that, you know, the version of Explorer that is in Windows 7, you know, Windows Explorer is, like everything else in Windows 7, it's very streamlined. It accommodates some of the new features like libraries and so forth, virtual folders, but kind of a nice change from the cluttered and awful, you know, UIs of the past. So I'll be writing up something more about this as we go forward.
I think Windows Explorer is immensely better. And, you know, in the past, I would always drag it off the toolbar down there. I leave it there, and I use it all the time now. It's just, it's how I work
with files. There's so much weirdness. I mean, it would almost, you could write like a chapter in a book about this, like the weird stuff that we went through with the shell, you know, in the early, you know, Windows 95 through Windows, I don't know, XP or something, there was, you know, My Computer, but there was also Windows Explorer. And these things in the old versions of these systems would give you different views. You know, one of them had the tree view and one didn't. And, you know, they played around for a while, remember, in probably the Windows 98 timeframe with using a single click HTML style shell where you would hover over something and it would give you an underline, which you actually still kind of see in certain UIs in Windows. It's very interesting, you know, how this thing has evolved over time.
Your Windows 7 tip of the week.
Yeah, this one's really basic, but a lot of people just don't know that this is there, even though when Windows 7 was evolving, this became a very, very big deal. In older versions of Windows, again, you used to have the capability, in fact, you used to have it right in setup, where you could actually uncheck items to be installed in Windows, you know. And I'd have to, this is off the top of my head, but I think looking back at Windows 98 or Windows 98 SE, I think that in those versions of Windows, as part of setup, you could actually uncheck things or check things, including some third-party programs. I think that Windows 98 ship with an old version of the real network software, for example, probably because of some lawsuit or whatever. This went away for a couple of versions of Windows, but it's back now in Windows 7. They don't let you do it in setup because obviously one of the deals with Windows 7 is they want it to be streamlined and simple and all that. But you can, after the fact, go and access a list of, not all, but many, you know, programs and services in Windows that you can actually just turn off. And the way you get to it is from the what used to be called add and remove programs. It's actually called programs and features, but one in Windows 7. But one of the options there is turn Windows features on or off. And as you look down that list, there are actually some interesting things that you can turn off. Things like a lot of the media programs, Windows Media Player, Windows Media Center, Windows DVD Maker can all be turned off. Internet Explorer can be uninstalled. All of the games that ship with Windows can be uninstalled. A lot of the printing type stuff and the tablet PC components, which for some reason are installed in every single computer, whether you have them or not. The Windows Gadget stuff can be uninstalled. The XPS stuff, which is Microsoft's doomed document format, you know, if you don't want to use that stuff, that can all be turned off. So it's worth exploring if you want to, again, further streamline Windows 7, if it's not streamlined enough for you out of the box, or if you're going to do something like, look, I'm using Chrome, I don't ever want IE to come up under any circumstance, you could actually get rid of it and ensure that it's, you know, obviously the underlying components are still in the system, but the application itself will be removed. So there's a way to do this now in Windows 7 that wasn't available in the past couple of versions, at least.
Very cool. This is where we'd put the Audible pick of the week. We'll save that for next week.
Okay.
Sword of Shannara. But.
Wow.
I'll let you'll you talk
appreciate,
about it.
You'll appreciate my story about this one.
I can't wait. Next week. Like I said, you're sold out. They're battling to get on Paul's show. They love Paul, and we're not surprised. Somebody in the chat room said, I might be reading too much into this, but it's pretty clear to me Paul and Leo hate each other.
It is. It's the teeth grinding.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I actually have to bathe every time after I do the show.
I've worked, you know, one of the things you learn in television, I've worked with so many people, many losers, so many hideous, horrible, evil people. Yeah.
I'm so happy to be the latest of those.
Yeah, and I just learned that, you know, you smile.
Yeah.
You say, you're...
Just smile.
You smile.
You
I mean, we're going to bleep that sucker out.
No, I
you said under his voice.
For some reason, we're cutting this out.
Just the part where you said,
sorry.
although it was heartfelt and it stung me deeply, yes.
No. I've said this to so many people. I would never do this if it wasn't for you. I enjoy doing this a lot. If this was just me, if it was me and someone else, it wouldn't be the same.
No, I think it's so much fun. I agree with you.
Yeah.
And so many people tell me, get that Paul off the air. He's a jerk.
Yeah,
hate him.
Yeah.
And I just tell him. No, one of the reasons, and it was a cold call to Paul because I don't think we'd ever met.
Nope.
But I had read the Super Site for Windows religiously, and the thing I always liked about it is you just said what you thought, and you were outspoken, and you didn't give a damn about what anybody thought. And I knew you get heat. I would see John Gruber and others just tearing into you, and you just stood for what you believed in. And I thought, that's the kind of guy I want on this network, somebody who knows what he knows, believes in it, and doesn't let people, you know, talk him out of it. And that's why you.
Sure. I mean, this should always be self doubt, but when you know you're right, or
God knows we're ridden with self doubt here. I mean, that's
and since we're stroking each other's ego, one of the other things I've told people is that it astonishes me how much you know about how much stuff. You know, I mean, there's
I just listen to you.
No, but you regurgitate well. No, but you almost have the right not to. You shouldn't have to know as much as you do. And it's interesting because, it's a gift. I mean,
thank you. You know what, Paul? The thing that's really true is I love this subject matter. And if I didn't, God, I'd be in hell.
The subject matter being us?
Or? Yeah, you and me.
Yeah.
And how great I am. I love that subject matter. No, the technology. I love technology. I love talking. I could talk about this all day. In fact, I do. And can you imagine if it was something you didn't like?
Yeah,
how hard that would be?
Sure.
We talked last week about how Sam Whitmore finally got burned out and said, I can't do this anymore. I've never gotten to that stage. I just love it. And it's working with people like you that teach me so much that really make it fun. I am always learning. So you know what?
I like Paul. It's okay. He's not such a bad guy.
Sorry to disappoint you.
Sorry to disappoint. but what it is you're so deadpan. You have that Stephen Wright style.
Some people don't get it. You know, I remember I was in Dallas. I was on a road show. We were doing a tour about Microsoft security. And then Microsoft at the time had the pillars. You know, everything was the pillars of whatever. And, you know, we were in this basement of like a Masonic lodge or something. And there were these crazy pillars in the room. And I said something like, well, we're surrounded by the pillars of trustworthy computing down here. And I swear to God, you could hear a cricket in the back. And they're looking at each other.
No idea what you're talking about.
Did he just insult us? You know, you could almost feel like like someone was going to light a torch, and that was going to be the end of that.
Oh, I love it. let's get our software pick of the week, and then this bromance can fade off.
We'll take it off like we usually do. So, unfortunately, I don't have a great pick this week. I almost wanted to do my own little middle finger extended toward Cupertino, but I guess I would say, obviously, if you have an iPod or an iPhone or an iPad, I'm sorry, but you know, you're stuck with iTunes. You at least deserve to get the latest version. There are improvements. It's worth checking out.
I don't think you have a choice. Don't you kind of always have to?
It'd be tough to avoid. On my own, you know, one of the things I did when I was in Germany was I jailbroke my iPhone because coincidentally that very day they released that really easy web-based installer.
Right.
And I want to say that the version of the iPhone, you know, the iOS software I had on there was just 4.0. Now, since then, they've released like 4.01 or 4.02. And Apple is incessant about trying to get you to update that thing. But of course, if I do this, the jailbreaking will be broken.
Right.
And it happened to me almost instantly. Yeah, you have to be really careful. And Apple, of course, has an Apple software updater that's on your PC. And I don't know how it works on the Mac, but on the PC, they're trying to get you to install stuff all the time. So it's hard to avoid. But I would also say that if digital media is important to you and you're managing a music collection, regardless of whether you have whatever kind of device and all that, I think it's also worth checking out what Microsoft is doing on the Zune side. There will be an update to the Zune software coming out soon to accommodate Windows Phone and some other new features. But for right now, the version that's out now, I think it's version 4.2, is still excellent. And I think an interesting comparison about how two different companies handle the same kind of functionality. I think a lot of you will, if you're used to iTunes and haven't used the Zune software, would be shocked at how good some of the Microsoft stuff really is. So definitely check out both of those things. You know, the latest version of iTunes, and I didn't put this in the show notes, but also the latest version of the Zune PC software.
Cool. This show went on so long, Paul, by the way. I just want to point out, I now have ice.
Ice has formed. It's like paint healing.
Ken comes running in. He says, look, the ice is frozen. You can now have your iced coffee.
It's great.
Is it still hot in Dedham, or is it?
It is 97 degrees today, but we're that hurricane's coming.
Oh, that's right.
I don't think it's not going to hit us full force, but it's going to go by us and hit the Cape, and we're definitely going to have some crazy, you know, Dorothy and Toto type weather around here.
So those summertime storms are kind of wild when it gets really windy and it's hot and humid.
It's gross, yeah. But I guess this is it. So once this storm cracks through here.
It's been good knowing you, Paul.
Okay.
Board up the windows.
I can't wait to get off of this thing.
Paul is.
I'm so tired of you when you're talking.
Until the boat sinks. Paul is the editor-in-chief of the Supersite for Windows, WinSupersite.com, news editor for Windows IT Pro. His book, Windows 7 Secrets, is in stores now. You can pre-order Windows Phone Secrets on Amazon. I saw it's up there, so that's exciting. And that'll be coming out soon.
Yeah. That release date is a guess, and that's incorrect.
Oh, it's a bad guess.
It will be out before that.
You have to say that, because otherwise that would be kind of...
I think if you look at the Windows Phone books on Amazon, they all have the same or similar dates. I think we can suffice to say that date is...
Sooner. It's going to be sooner.
Yeah.
Good. Paul Theroux, thank you so much. It's always great. I'll see you next week on Windows Weekly. Oh, and don't forget to catch Paul on Home Theater Geeks. He did it on Monday, so it's up on the internet now.
Is that up now?
Yeah, twit.tv/htg. He talks about the Home Theater.
That's a link.
Yeah. Thanks, Paul. See you later.
Thank you.
All right, Paul. I don't know what happened with the internet there. That was weird. Now you're breaking up again. I don't know what we're doing here. Look at that. That is an attractive Paul Theroux. He's basically, he looks like Freddy Krueger.